Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
On the hotline right now, our friend Daryl McDaniels, of course, with Run DMC, multi-platinum rock and roll Hall of Famer, the season finale of the docuseries Hip Hop, The Songs That Shook America. It's Sunday night on AMC.
And, you know, this is a story that we know because we've been friends with Daryl for so long. But, you know, he grew up loving rock and roll. And he grew up at a time that was, you know, they were the innovators of this new style. And, you know, you think about, like, Grandmaster Flash, you know, Sugar Hill Gang.
Oh, yeah.
All these musicians that we got turned on to when I was a kid. And then it happened, man. You heard it. You heard Walk This Way. You heard King of Rock. You heard Tricky. You heard Adidas. And you realized it. Everything changed in that moment for you.
Born May 31st in Harlem and raised in Harlem's Queens, New York. Inspired by the music of Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, he taught himself to DJ in 1978. By 1984, he had picked up the mic and helped form what would become one of the biggest rap groups in music history, Run DMC. Millions of albums sold and status as one of the forefathers of hip-hop led to an induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. An ass kick and collaborations with Jackal and Pop Evil have opened him up to an all-new audience. He released the memoir, 10 Ways Not to Commit Suicide, and this Sunday night you can see him on the season finale of the six-part AMC docuseries, Hip Hop, The Songs That Shook America. Please welcome, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame member, hip hop legend and friend of the show, the man known as DMC, Daryl McDaniels.
How are you doing, D? How are you this morning?
What's up, Johnny? Good morning. I'm doing good. I'm getting ready to go to the Bronx to talk to some kids at a middle school.
Nice. Nice, man. That'll be fun.
I know.
You never stop moving, man. You never stop getting... You stay the busiest, maybe, just this side of Jesse Dupree.
Yep. I know. I learned a lot from Jesse.
And how is everybody? How's your family? You guys ready for Thanksgiving? Everybody's good?
Yeah. Everybody's good. Everybody's healthy. You know, right now it's freezing here. It's like 12 degrees or something
crazy.
Yeah,
it's cold here, too.
But the sun is out.
Listen, I'll be in your neck of the woods around Thanksgiving for that whole weekend, man. So if you're out and about, you're not doing any shows over that weekend, are you?
I believe I'm around Thanksgiving. You're going to be at a 28th, Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah. I'll get there Wednesday and leave Sunday.
Yeah, give me a buzz, man. I'm here, I believe. I'm trying to get there for when Jackal comes.
That'll be, man, we've been talking about that too, man. Jesse said that may be a possibility. I was like, oh, please let this happen because this show is going to be a monster.
They're playing the theater, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to come, man. I told Jesse, I spoke to him about maybe a couple of weeks ago. I said, I'll come.
We've been talking about shooting the DVD there. There's a bunch of really cool things with the VFW and our nation's vets.
Oh, cool.
And there's just some really cool stuff going on. It'll be a sellout crowd. Like these guys are going to be ready to burn it to the ground by the time that 21st gets here.
I can imagine they're going to turn it to ashes. But I told Jesse I'm going to come. He sent me like 3 or 4 dates. And this KC is definitely the one that I'll cancel everything to come to.
Good, man. So this I love this docuseries, Hip Hop, The Songs That Shook America. And it's true because, you know, you guys did change music and you broke down these walls that it really wasn't, It was partly with society, but more, I've, you know, come to really understand it was the record industry trying to create lanes so they could profit more on it. They only wanted to sell what they would, what they would call black music to black people and white music to white people because it made them more money.
Exactly. Right, exactly. It kept their pockets very, very deep and fat. But they had even no, they couldn't even comprehend what was already there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They were just looking at what was happening in front of them and then what they could continue to feed off of. They had no idea about what already was going on with or without them. That's a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we came in 1984, when we did the first album and we did the song Rockbox, that actually was the beginning of totally changing everything because MTV put it on.
Mm-hmm.
And they should have never did that. Once Rockbox got on MTV, you know, all the metal kids, all the rock kids, all the, you know, the long-haired hairband kids, and musicians for that matter, and people like the Ramones and Bon Jovi. I remember in 84, we would go down to the Danceteria, and we would go down to the World. And, you know, this is
the huge clubs.
This is the Village.
They were the
biggest. Downtown New York City. Yeah. And, you know, you see Madonna running through there. You see the Beastie Boys, not as a rap group, but as a punk band running through there. And you would see Basquiat and Keith Aaron and you know, all the artists and writers. And everybody was coming up to us telling us how cool they thought we were because of this Rockbox song. But what it did, it let everybody know that, yo, this is just music. And the same feeling that the white rock kid got is the same feeling that the black hip-hopper got. We're just dressed different.
That's all. And that's it. And kids are always going to be kids. Their hormones are raging. Yep. They're figuring out who they are. It's just a big change. And there's a certain type of groove and music that's always going to appeal. And some of us never outgrow it, man. I never have. And anybody who says rock is dead, you always get that every 20 years or 15 years, some tool bag says rock is dead. And you're like, no, you're dead. I promise there are more teenagers coming and they're horny and they're angry and they're growing and they're confused and they're trying to figure their world out.
Exactly. So when we did Rockbox, that got us on MTV. And then remember, that was 84. Then in 1985, the next step was for us, we were serious, but we really wasn't serious, you know, because the whole hip hop thing was all in fun. And you did stuff to get attention so that you could just do what it was you needed to do. Right. So remember, in 84 Rockbox dropped, 85, we do a song called The King of Rock. So now these hip-hop kids are calling themselves the Kings of Rock. And the funny thing about that, our black audience here in New York City at first didn't get it because they thought we were trying to sell out. But, yo, Bon Jovi, Cher, Tina Turner, the Ramones, every actor, every football player, every athlete, and all the rock dudes from the Ramones to Lou Reed, they loved us. Because this is funny, Johnny. They loved us because not only it was cool that we was using rock guitars and we was doing this new rap thing, but they loved us because they said, these guys got the balls to call themselves the King of Rock.
Yes.
So that they appreciated that enthusiasm. You know what I'm saying?
Well, sure.
That's
you challenged it. When you put out a song called I'm the King of Rock, There Is None Higher, Sucker MCs Better Call Me Sire, you think about at that moment, there's a bunch of white rock kids going, what? How are you the King of Rock? You guys are rap guys. Rap guys are what? You're challenging everything. And that, what's more punk rock than that? Nothing is more punk rock than that.
Yeah. Tim Armstrong from Rancid, he said, when King of Rock came out, most of the punk rock kids had one middle finger up to the world. And then here comes this guy, Run DMC. You know, they was already feeling us with Rockbox. But when we shouted where the Kings are off, he said it made every punk rocker put two fingers
up. It's true.
It was crazy.
I remember the feeling. Yes, because it was, you know, you just the whole machine got broken that day. And for the better of everybody. So now you have this interesting thing going on and Kings of Rock get you, they even make a bigger dent, but it's not the biggest dent yet. The biggest dent was yet to come.
Yep. And that was 86 with Walk This Way.
Yeah.
That was like, That was the one that just, put it like this. People tell me, yo, DMC, man, I'm talking about white people, black people, Puerto Rican, Christians, Muslims, atheists. They say, yo, when Steven Tyler took that mic stand and knocked down that wall that was separating off the video, he said it didn't just happen in the video, it happened in the world. And I'm like, wow, I never thought of it like that.
See, even as a kid, I saw that symbolism. I mean, you totally saw it. You were like, And then that was rebellion, right? That was more of that that feeling of, well, we're just going to do it differently than the people before us. And it fired you up as a kid because you wanted it then. You wanted to break the mold. You wanted to go further. You wanted you guys to see what you would do. That's why we loved it.
And one of the things that was real cool, too, I think it really, really, really worked because it was really cool that we did it with them. Mm-hmm. Like, we could have just remade Walk This Way Over without them. It would have been now. Yo, remember that record in 86 when Run DMC did Aerosmith Walk This Way Over? But since we did it with them and made a visual state.
It was that endorsement, man.
And they participated. I mean, Steve, you know, Steve, he's like a little kid. He was very enthusiastic and at the making of the song, Jay was teaching him how to DJ his own record. Like, he actually gave Steven Tyler DJ lessons for Steven Tyler to learn how to cut and scratch his own song. I mean, it was just so beautiful.
And you being growing up being such a rock fan, at that moment realizing, you know, you guys had definitely were on your way. But that moment that the legendary Aerosmith, that's gotta feel, you know, just unbelievable from a kid.
No, it was so unbelievable because, you know, growing up here in New York City in the 70s, there was this radio station called 77 WABC, and the jock was Dan Ingram. I think he passed like 4 or 5 years ago. Rest in peace, Dan Ingram. But that station, 77 WABC, was very unique because they would play, you know, the Beatles and Joni Mitchell and Bob Dylan and Harry Chapin and Jim Croce, Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
You know, they played all the rock guys, but they also played Sly and the Family Stone, James Brown, and the Jackson 5. But the reason why I was so attracted to rock and folk rock, because when I was a kid, remember, when I was a kid, my moms and pops were still young. So Marvin Gaye, Aretha Franklin, and Al Green was their music. So I'm a kid. I didn't have a music that I could define as my own. But the thing that gravitated me to rock was, you know, artists like Neil Young singing about Kent University, John Fogerty singing Fortunate Son. So a lot of the rock guys talked about politics, social issues, presidents, and government. So every time a rock song with this loud-ass guitar and dope-ass drums would come on, and when they opened their mouth, I related to it like it was social studies or history because I was a good student. Because remember, I'm a kid, so Marvin Gaye and Aretha Franklin and Al Green, they sing about love, and that's when my moms and pops were still cool. But when I heard rock and folk rock, it was content in music that I could relate to. And then the thing that made me love rock was the drums and the guitar were way stronger than R&B and soul music. So I was a comic book kid. You know, those rock guys, they played the drums and those guitars like the Hulk. So that was the thing that I think gravitated me to rock, so that when I started making hip-hop, I don't want to rhyme over James Brown. I want to rhyme over a drum that's powerful and banging like We Will Rock You, that Queen band.
Yeah, you were making anthems. Yeah, you were making anthems. Exactly. When you listen to King of Rock, that is an anthem, like, you're right, like, We Will Rock You, like we're not going to take it.
That's what it was.
Sure?
Yep.
By the way, have you seen Bohemian Rhapsody yet, the movie?
Yes, I did.
I cried like a pussy at the end. I mean, they're doing Wembley, and I mean, I'm sobbing on an airplane watching that.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, that kid deserved the Oscar. Rami,
was
amazing. You know, and my favorite part of the whole thing was to see that the drummer came up with the idea for We Will Rock You.
Yes.
And then Freddie walks in. I loved all of that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It was really good. And it's funny now because I was speaking in a high school a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, at the end of, when I finish speaking, I take questions. So, you know, the kids have all type of questions. Adidas deal, what was Steven Tyler like, all of that stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then one kid put his hand up and he was like, yo, my father said y'all did Live Aid like that band that did in that Bohemian Rhapsody movie. And I was like, oh, thank you for asking. I said, yeah, my group, yeah, in addition to being the first to do everything all your favorite rappers are doing now, my group was the only rap group called to do Live Aid at that time. And it was like, why'd they call y'all? And I was like, I don't know. I said, I guess they appreciated the music that we was making. And that's what I was trying to tell them. I say, yo, you people, you young people have so much potential in you. You don't have to follow and make knucklehead, ignorant, disrespectful music like the songs that you hear in hip-hop. I said, the most powerful rapper doesn't curse.
Yeah.
So they was like, wow. You know, they was like, wow, you did Live Aid like Freddie Mercury. I was like, yeah. I said, I'm going to put that in a rhyme now.
Seriously. But, you know, you do forget about 1985, man. It was what time of the day did they have you guys on?
Yeah, we went on like, I think it was about 11 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
And you know what's funny? What's funny about that, if you go to YouTube and you pull up our performance, it was very windy that day. And in the beginning, every time Jay tried to call us out with the turntables, the needle kept jumping.
Oh.
But our thing was, because Jay, remember, Jam Master Jay never used digital recording machines.
That's right.
He actually used the vinyl. So if you look at our Live Aid performance on YouTube, the needle keeps jumping. And the scary thing about Live Aid was the reception was 80-20. 80% of the crowd loved us. But there was 20% of the crowd that was like, boo, what are they here for? I'm talking about the real guys, hardcore rock guys that wasn't open until they wasn't open. And we say, cool, you know, consider them, their rock was sacred. But they wasn't open until they were sitting in one night in 86,
right,
jumping through the channels and went to MTV and saw us standing with their boys Aerosmith,
right.
Then they had to shut up.
Yeah, that's it. Well, that's it. I mean, you went up on stage in front of 100,000 people.
Yeah, that was scary, man. It was scary, but the cool thing was when we walked out there was applause. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
It was like, those are those guys. Yeah, we love those, the guys that did that rock box song. Like, it was cool. It was cool. And, you know, it was all about showing the people that we were sincere and not trying to capitalize off their culture.
Man, you know what? And I've said this to you before, but it's worth saying again. To listen to you, you know, we just for us to talk about this makes me so happy to hear how happy you are. There was a time when, you know, things weren't so great, and you were really having a hard time, man. You know, when you read that book, 10 Ways to Not Commit Suicide.
Yeah.
You were going through so much. You found out you were adopted. You were having the problems with your throat and dysphonia.
Jay got killed.
Yeah. And you know,
people don't know. I was Johnny. I woke up depressed. I found out that I was adopted. Jam Master Jay got shot and killed. And my father died, like one after the other. And I was in a position where, you know, I'm the mighty DMC.
Right.
The invincible, devastating mind controller. And I didn't know what to do, man. I did not know what to do. And I can understand people that's going through stuff. But the thing that saved my life is when I went to get help. The first step to get help was, let me go to rehab. And then when I was in rehab, I discovered, because some people go to rehab, stop drinking, come out, and don't deal with the issue. In rehab, I discovered the most powerful, gangster, invincible thing a person can do. I discovered this thing called therapy. And that therapy, being able to talk to myself and accept everything that was negative with me, finding out it's okay to have problems, to be vulnerable, to have a weakness, to admit that you have a weakness and you're afraid of something or feeling something away, that's the most powerful thing that you can ever do. So what I went through, I can understand now, because since I was never there, you know, I could understand and feel and understand the grief, the isolation, the loneliness, and just the only way out. I need to get out of this feeling. Everybody out there listening, going through something, you okay the way you are. We love you. You're perfect. It's okay to have whatever mental issue you have. We won't get mad at you when you have a cold, when you have a toothache.
That's right. If you broke your arm. Yeah, you'd go to the hospital.
Doctor.
Yeah.
I'm noticing I need a new prescription for my contacts and my glasses. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go to the eye doctor.
That's right.
So everybody listening, going through something. First thing you need to do, if you don't admit how you feel, whether good or bad, you never heal. And it's okay not to be okay.
Hey, we've all known older people who simply wouldn't go to the doctor, they didn't feel right, and it grew into something, and it took their life. And we go, isn't that sad when they had health insurance and they had a chance, they could have beat this disease. Why do we treat mental illness any differently? And you're right. If you broke your leg, you wouldn't walk around with a broken leg.
Yep. So just go get somebody that can help you. Don't be afraid. And I always tell the kids, because I speak to a lot of kids, because, you know, the kids have issues too, like us grown-ups.
Sure.
And I always tell the kids, you may not want to tell your brother, your father, your mother, but I said, there's always somebody that you could just go talk to just to get it out. You know, I told this one kid, all right, you don't want to talk to nobody. I don't feel like opening up. I say, who in the school did you like? She said, I really like the librarian lady. I said, just walk up to her one day, nobody got to know, and just say, Miss McGillicuddy, there's something I need to tell you that I never told anybody. And it's funny, the little girl did it, and she said, when I came back to speak to her, she said, I said, what happened when you spoke to the librarian? She said, Mr. DMC, because I'm old now. She was like, Mr. DMC, the librarian lady told me she went through the same thing, too. With a smile on her face, because now the little girl didn't feel alone. I don't want anybody suffering with whatever it is, anxiety, substance abuse, alcoholism, anorexia, low self-esteem, depression, whatever it is, there's always somebody in the deep darkness pit of your despair. There's always somebody you could think of that brings a smile, if not to your face, to your soul. That's the person you just walk over and just say, yo, I don't know if you can help me, but I need to get this out of me.
See, I love
and I
this
guarantee
about
you. It'll lead you somewhere.
This is why you're a great. This is why you're a great. And I say that with all of my heart, Daryl. If you're just joining the show, for DMC, Daryl Mack from Run DMC, this is why you're great. Because you're fearless in that your observations. You'll always help people. I've always seen you reach out to other people. You make incredible music. You never stop. You break all boundaries. You really are great. I mean, a true great. And you will always be remembered as such.
Well, I'm just thankful that I grew up loving superheroes, and I grew up loving people like a Neil Young, like a John Lennon, like a John Fogerty, like a Bob Dylan, like a Joni Mitchell, like a Harry Chapin, like a Jim Croce, that even though they had fun getting up there and rocking out, they always were concerned about their audience, because artists like that, even though they were these mega rich super rock stars, they always talked about stuff that the people went through. And that was key for me, learning. You know, I had some good teachers, something like that. I had some really good teachers.
But didn't it save us all? Like, you know, when you're a kid, and like we talk about now, maybe you don't have the most amount of friends. Maybe you don't fit in. Maybe you're the weird kid. Whatever's going on in your life, you don't have as much as your other friends. But, man, you could find so much comfort in music. So much. You could lose yourself in albums or books, and you just...
Exactly.
It was the thing that would absolutely save you.
Exactly, for sure.
I love you. Look, I can't wait to see you, man. I cannot wait. I want everyone to watch this hip-hop, Songs That Shook America, Sunday, 11 o'clock Kansas City time on AMC. If you're not going to be up, make sure you DVR it. It's the evolution of hip-hop and the voice that it has given America. You, man, and then I'll see you for sure December, but hopefully let's catch up in New York.
Yeah, no doubt. New York, so Kansas City, I am coming.
I can't wait. I love you, brother. It's good to hear you.
Thank you, Johnny. Love you, too. Love y'all up there, too. I'll see y'all soon.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.